It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Protecting the progress. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Governor Cuomo says that's what we need to do in New York, cautioning against complacency in the fight against coronavirus. Cuomo's concerned COVID cases on the rise in other states could spell trouble for New York State.
I never thought it would be this bad. Increasing in 40 states. New York State did a quarantine. We have a quarantine against 20 states.
Is that quarantine possible to enforce?
It is imperfect.
Cuomo tells NBC News that an uptick in coronavirus in New York may be unavoidable.
It's only a matter of time, in my book, until you see the New York infection rate go up because people from the other states are coming to New York and they are now bringing the infection rate.
And with the COVID cases climbing across the country,
we are in a war against this virus.
The White House today is reconvening its coronavirus task force. Chairing that task force is Vice President Mike Pence.
The outbreaks are serious.
The panel of health experts will hold a press conference with the president included at 5 o'clock this afternoon at the White House. At the same time, the White House is pushing for passage of another coronavirus stimulus package by the end of the month. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin will be selling that plan to Congress today.
We're going to make sure that we don't pay people more money to stay home than go to work. We want to make sure that people who can go to work safely can do so.
Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson says any new stimulus bill must be carefully crafted.
My hope is that we do it surgically, you know, that we would really do this right versus just throwing a lot of money at this.
The congressman says a tax cut is the quickest way to get much needed cash in the pockets of those who need it most.
Because of the dictates of governors, their jobs have been suspended now for some of them now going on several months.
A new report says one third of all the small businesses in New York City may never reopen after closing during the pandemic. Much of that stimulus money in the Congress is also meant to get schools back open come the fall. Florida's largest teachers union is suing Governor DeSantis for trying to get school up and running next month.
It is ludicrous to think that now, when the fire is even hotter, that we would take our children out of these protective bubbles that we've created. You know, we can mitigate learning losses, but the reality is that we cannot mitigate loss of life.
Carla Hernandez teaches middle school in Miami. The governor says remote learning is an option for those who don't feel safe going back to the classroom.
The governor is standing his ground, saying the schools have to reopen for in-person classes. He's almost being as strong about that as he has about mask mandates, not issuing a statewide mask mandate order. In fact, Florida is the only state along the Gulf Coast that doesn't have some kind of order statewide.
Correspondent David Begno, civil unrest continues across the country. More protests last night in Portland. Correspondent Carter Evans.
As the crowd rushed toward the courthouse here in Portland, officers responded with tear gas again.
For 54 nights in a row now, activists have clashed with cops on the streets of Oregon's largest city. Federal officers are there, sent in by the president to maintain order.
The governor and the mayor and the senators out there, they're afraid of these people. These people are anarchists. These are people that hate our country. And we're not going to let it go forward.
The federal agents are in Portland to protect government property as well as government workers. New video shows Chicago police being ambushed during a violent protest there last weekend. The cops were protecting a Christopher Columbus statue when they were attacked. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
That's not peaceful protest. That's anarchy, and we are going to put that down.
Chicago Police Superintendent David Brown says peaceful demonstrations have been hijacked by what he called the organized mobs.
49 Chicago police officers were injured. 40 9.
A dozen arrests made following that violent altercation between police and protesters last weekend in Chicago. In St. Louis, Missouri, the husband and wife attorneys who pointed guns at Black Lives Matter protesters have been slapped with felony charges. The couple is confident they were within their constitutional rights after the demonstrators marched onto their property uninvited last month.
The people that broke into my neighborhood, they're all trespassing. None of those people are arrested. None of those people are charged. The prosecutor has apparently decided that her job isn't to keep us safe from criminals, but to keep the criminals safe from us.
St. Louis homeowner Mark McCloskey, Missouri's attorney general, says he will seek to have the case dismissed. He calls it political prosecution. It's a welcome news for football fans. The NFL and its players union have cleared a major hurdle before training camp opens in just a few days. Has to do with COVID testing and getting rid of preseason games, something the players wanted. Elsewhere in professional sports, the abbreviated Major League Baseball season starts this Thursday, the day after tomorrow, and COVID tests on NBA players in the bubble in Orlando. Those tests have come back negative, all of them. Zero positive cases out of nearly 350 tests that were conducted. That is good news indeed. The shortened NBA season tips off next weekend. We'll have more on those stories in sports. Also ahead, why homelessness is everybody's business. Mask wearing tips in the summer heat and water woes in the Maple City.
Well, good afternoon. A more comfortable day underway than we have seen of late, with heat and humidity levels more in check, but it'll change tomorrow with some showers and storms due then as well. I'll have forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, we'll see you then. Here's what's happening where you live across New York and Pennsylvania. Amazon is pulling out of a major development project on Grand Island, New York, due to a lack of support from local residents. The tech giant wanted to build a massive distribution center on the island, but many residents say the traffic congestion would have been just too much.
You're putting one of the biggest warehouses in the world on an island that you can only get on and off on a couple bridges.
Grand Island resident Terry Hildebrand opposing any further commercialization of Grand Island. Amazon says it may construct its warehouse in nearby Niagara or Genesee counties. The project expected to create 1,000 new jobs. New York is withholding funds meant for not-for-profits, which provide social services to drug addicts. This despite a spike in overdoses during the pandemic.
Yeah, the state said it would withhold about 20% of those funds that agencies expected to get this month. Now, the move is a part of an effort to close the budget deficit that was already ballooning before the pandemic hit. State officials say they plan to release the rest of that funding if the federal government gives Albany a bailout. Now, service providers will decide between reducing services and laying off employees. Governor Cuomo suspended a law requiring the state to promptly pay nonprofits for their services while promising to set up COVID-19 testing sites in Georgia to help that state handle the pandemic. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Oneida County, New York Executive Anthony Picenti is lashing out at Governor Cuomo over his recent excursion to Savannah, Georgia. The governor spent Monday in the Peach State to lend support to Georgia in its fight against COVID-19. Picenti claims the governor hasn't given nearly the same attention to the Mohawk Valley in his own state.
He writes in a tweet, quote, "I guess he thinks it's more important to lend his direct support and expertise there than to those of us right here in Oneida County, New York, where he still hasn't called or visited once during this pandemic."
Tammy Palmer of Spectrum News. Still no word on when movie theaters can reopen in New York.
Yeah, theaters have been closed since mid-March when the pandemic began.
There's been no mention of movie theaters for weeks from either our lieutenant governor or our governor and what our status is. Feeling a little frustrated here.
Lynn Kinsella runs the Aurora Theater near Buffalo.
When they opened malls, I thought, okay, great, we're going to actually have the opportunity to reopen, and then at that point, there was absolutely no mention of movie theaters. So movie theaters and gyms also have been just kind of left out at this point.
A lot of local theaters say if they don't reopen soon, they'll never reopen again. Bill Price, Family Life News.
New York is lifting nursing home visitation restrictions, and that is music to Don Turner's ears. The Elmira man says it's been 3 months since he's been able to hug his dad at Arnett Health.
It's very hard, and it's very hard on the whole family that we can't, you know, we can't actually go in and hug them.
Arnett Health says it will permit in-person visitation starting next Tuesday, July 28th. At least 57,000 patients and workers have died from the coronavirus at nursing nursing homes across the country. There will be a major disruption in water service for the city of Hornell, New York, beginning at 8 o'clock tonight. The city's water treatment facility undergoing an extensive upgrade, which will not be complete until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Residents are being asked to refrain from any non-essential water use during that 12-hour period. Some areas will be completely without water and will be under a boil water advisory once service is restored there in Hornell. Penn State's been working for months now on new tools to better understand the spread of COVID-19. That story from Family Life's Terry Diener.
One of the tools is a simulation model of the spread of coronavirus that can be applied to different locations across Pennsylvania. It will be able to predict real-time positions of infected individuals in a specific geographical area in order to analyze possible scenarios where the virus could spread. Another is an artificial intelligence tool that helps determine how testing sites and coronavirus resources should be distributed across Pennsylvania. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
New York Republican Chris Jacobs was sworn in this morning as the newest member of the U.S. House of Representatives. The former state senator was the winner in last month's special election to fill a vacant congressional seat near Buffalo. Jacobs runs again for that seat in November. Democratic congressional candidate Tracy Mitrano is challenging New York Congressman Tom Reed to five debates before Election Day. She wants to debate the Republican incumbent in each of the 23rd congressional district's five media markets. Those would be Binghamton, Elmira, Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo. Representative Reed beat Mitrano in 2018 to retain his seat for a fourth term. Homeless advocates are bracing for a tsunami of homelessness once Pennsylvania's eviction moratorium expires at the end of August.
We are all one crisis away from homelessness.
That's activist Chris Kapp. She says homelessness is a problem in rural America, not just the big cities.
They don't think about people who are hidden, staying in barns, staying in their cars, who are in shelters, who are doubled up with other families.
Pastor Matthew Best runs the Truck Stop Ministry in central Pennsylvania. It provides laundry, meals, and showers to those in need.
A lot of folks who are homeless have jobs. It's just that they don't make enough to actually be able to afford housing.
He says being homeless is often a full-time job.
These folks spend all day, all the time, trying to figure out, where am I going to get my next meal? Where am I going to sleep tonight? If I've got kids, what am I going to do?
Diane Nyland is founder of the homeless ministry Hear Us, Inc. Her focus is homeless children, many of whom have gone months without meals at school.
It keeps me awake at night. All these families are going to be totally disenfranchised and without any means of survival in communities that are already reeling from the pandemic. We can't forget those that are on the bottom rung of the ladder.
She says the best way you can help out the homeless problem is to donate to a local shelter, church, or ministry. The average age, by the way, of a homeless person in this country is just 9 years old. With face masks the new norm, dermatologists are seeing a rise in cases of what they call maskne. Not acne, maskne. It's a real thing, says Lauren Hall of WGRZ-TV.
Well, ever since masks have been a thing, we've been hearing this term, maskne or mask acne. Dermatologists say it's more than just a buzzword. It's a real diagnosis, and it's on the rise. For some patients, the combination of wearing face coverings, sweating in the hot summer weather, and managing the stress of the pandemic have combined to create a perfect storm for acne to form on the chin and the cheeks. Now, the clinical term for this is actually acne mechanica. Up until now, it's been common in athletes who wear helmets, such as football and hockey players.
Dermatologists say the best way to prevent maskne is to wash your face often, take frequent breaks from wearing your mask when you can, and refrain from wearing makeup under your mask. Sports is next. It's the 2-Minute Drill with Sonny Delfiet.
Thank you, Bob. You know, after the Canadian government denied the Toronto Blue Jays permission to play at the Rogers Centre due to travel concerns related to the pandemic, they're looking for other places to play, maybe Pittsburgh. Blue Jays general manager Ross Atkins confirmed that the club is talking to several major league teams about sharing their ballparks to hold home games. The Pirates confirmed they're talking to the Blue Jays about sharing PNC Park in Pittsburgh. So why not just play at their AAA affiliate in Buffalo? ESPN's Jeff Passan.
The problem with it is that the lighting in the outfield is substandard when it comes to making it look like a pretty TV product, and the clubhouses are small, and the Blue Jays are worried about social distancing inside of that.
Toronto's home opener is scheduled for July 29th. In action yesterday, a slugfest, Cleveland over the Pirates 11-7, and Joe Girardi and the Phillies traveled to the Yankees and end up in a 2-2 tie. Girardi on returning as an opposing manager.
I always came in through the garage, down the stairs, into the home clubhouse, and this, we came through the loading dock and, you know, from center field all the way around, so that was different.
In other sports, the NFL is willing to grant its players' request to not play any preseason games this summer as the league and union work toward an agreement to have the regular season start as scheduled. The two sides did agree on protocols for COVID-19 testing. NBC's Sam Brock.
A newly approved plan to tackle testing requires daily COVID exams for the first 2 weeks of training camp, then every other day, provided players stay below a 5% positive rate. Anything above that, and it goes back to every day.
The two sides must also agree on any compensation given to players who want to opt out of all or part of the season. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has decided not to grant an exception to a public safety executive order to the Giants and Jets, forcing both teams to play home games without fans in attendance. The teams, which both called MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey home, issued a joint statement confirming the news. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, the mask police strike again. Is it really safe to go back to school, and are polar bears really in danger?
On Friday, Dr. J.I. Packer, age 93, one of the great theological and pastoral minds of our day, went home to be with the Lord. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. One fall afternoon in 1994, as a not new but newly serious believer, I wandered into a tiny Christian bookstore in a small town in Tennessee, and a book caught my eye. Well, actually, the title of the book caught my eye, Knowing God, written by someone who at the time I'd never heard of, Dr. J.I. Packer. However, the name of almost every Christian leader I did know, like Chuck Colson, Johnny Erickson Tada, Chuck Swindoll, Elizabeth Elliott, Billy Graham, and many more, was on the dust jacket, offering their endorsement of this book. Each one was along the lines of, this is pretty much one of the most important books I've ever read other than the Bible itself. So I picked it up, and I read it, and I've been recommending Knowing God ever since. The book is best described as a work of devotional theology. Now, for many Christians, of course, devotional and theology are incompatible words, as if diving deep into theological truth is the stuff of the head, while walking with God is more a matter of the heart. Packer, however, in a thoroughly biblical way, destroys that false dichotomy in Knowing God. Two statements which this Oxford-trained theologian made in the second chapter of the book hit me like a ton of bricks. First, one can know a great deal about God without much knowledge of Him. And second, one can know a great deal about godliness without much knowledge of Him. Throughout the book, Packer clarifies that God must be known on His own terms. Too often, the God that Christians claim to know is one that's made in our own image. We must know the God that's revealed in Scripture and clarified by proper theology. And that's why I recommend this book, even for those who've studied theology deeply. And if you've never studied theology, or even if you think that theology gets in the way of personal devotion to Jesus Christ, I'll wager that Packer's classic book will convince you otherwise. A few years ago, Dr. Packer announced the end of his public ministry. This eminent pastor-theologian was losing his vision. He was sustained during the last several years, not by his feelings, but by what he knew to be true about the God that he knew. On the Gospel Coalition website, Dr. Packer told interviewer Ivan Mesa that in the days when it was physically possible for me to do these things, I was concerned, even anxious, to get ahead with doing them. But now that it's no longer possible, I acknowledge the sovereignty of God. Describing what he called as Christian realism, Dr. Packer said, God knows what He's up to. And I've had enough experiences of His goodness in all sorts of ways not to have any doubt about the present circumstances. Now, that's a good word for all of us. Aging is one of the stages of life that our youth-fixated culture just doesn't prepare us for. Years ago, Dr. Packer wrote, "How should we view the onset of old age? The common assumption is that it's mainly a process of loss.
But here the Bible breaks in, highlighting the further thought that spiritual ripeness is worth far more than material wealth in any form, and that spiritual ripeness should continue to increase as one gets older. That kind of perspective comes not merely from knowing about God or knowing about godliness, but only from truly knowing God. You can pick up a copy of this book by J.I. Packer at the Breakpoint.org online bookstore. This past Friday, July 17th, Dr. J.I. Packer, age 93, died. When he was asked for his final words to the church, Packer said simply, "Glorify Christ every way." And I join with thousands and thousands of others and thank God that his faith is now sight. Now at last, he truly and fully knows the God that he so faithfully studied and taught so many of us about for so many years. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Wonderful tribute. Thank you, John. Let's take it outside next. Kevin Williams, your turn.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Intervals of clouds and sunshine. There'll be a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms across parts of central and western Pennsylvania. And that activity couldn't make it into the southern tier and southern Finger Lakes in New York, but isolated. High temperatures, mid-70s to the mid-80s. Tonight, some clouds and mild 60s. Late tonight and tomorrow, rather cloudy with some showers and thunderstorms. Thunderstorms tomorrow could be locally strong. High temperatures in the lower to mid-80s. Thursday, cloud, sun, couple showers and thundershowers, and high temperatures within a few degrees of 80.
All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center. Thank you kindly. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. And here's what's going on this Tuesday afternoon, the 21st of July. Joe Biden is confirming that there are four African-American women on his short list of possible vice presidential running mates. Biden says important in his administration will be that his VP looks like America. His words, the former VP will reveal his choice before accepting the Democratic presidential nomination next month in Milwaukee. Florida teachers have filed a lawsuit against the state as it seeks to get kids back in school next month. Governor Ron DeSantis.
Parents need to be free to choose the best environment for their student, for their kids.
DeSantis is confident the school is safe in the Sunshine State for kids and teachers alike, despite an uptick in COVID cases. Florida's largest teachers union, not so sure. It is fighting the mandate to reopen school in the midst of this ongoing pandemic.
One child gets it and brings it to their teacher, and their teacher has a compromised immune system or a family member that does, and they bring that home, then it just keeps spreading more and more.
Florida's education secretary says remote learning is an option for parents who do not feel safe sending the little ones back to the classroom. A woman who entered a Walmart near Park City, Utah, without a mask on over the weekend was assaulted by another shopper. Lieutenant Andrew Wright with the local sheriff's office says that woman had a health condition which made wearing a mask impossible for her.
You don't necessarily see a disability or a medical condition just by looking at an individual. In this exact scenario, someone walks in without a mask. It's not your job to be the mask police.
Surveillance video showed a man using his shopping cart to strike that woman several times for not wearing a mask. A controversial new study suggests because of global warming, polar bears could be extinct by the end of the century. Scientists argue that melting sea ice is making it hard for polar bears to find a place to call home. Experts say the bears are forced onto land farther away from their food source. In short, this study suggests that polar bears are being starved into extinction. But others suggest the science of global warming is anything but settled, and the polar bear population is not at all threatened. In fact, they say all 19 habitats of polar bears on planet Earth have seen a return to healthy bear numbers. A preseason baseball game got political last night in Oakland, California.
When the national anthem began playing last night in Oakland, four San Francisco Giant players kneeled, and they were joined by their manager, Gabe Kapler. Kapler became the first major league manager to take a knee during the anthem.
I wanted to demonstrate my dissatisfaction with our clear systemic racism in our country.
When the baseball season finally begins on Thursday, many other players are expected to kneel during the anthem.
Correspondent Steve Futterman. It's 25 past the hour. Next at noon, more of our conversation with Cornell University education specialist Lee Adler on COVID and the classroom. Here's Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
This has been a debate that has raged on for the last couple of months for sure, and is only going to escalate as we get closer to the fall semester, and that is on reopening schools. What are your thoughts of trying to get kids back in the classrooms this fall?
Well, I think we should keep trying every conceivable way that's safe, number one, because amongst other critical things involving children's welfare is that they learn better in schools. They are able to develop better because of the social relationships in school. And overall, the so-called regularity of school is very, very important for children. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we have the overhang of, despite all the policy considerations that have been developed very carefully by the educational departments and the state health departments, we still have gaps in safety that range from situations involving being able to have the children physically distance enough once they return to the classroom. Do our schools, especially in our rural school areas, our smaller school districts, do they have sufficient space to space the children safely? Can the teachers return safely to those kind of classroom settings? The uncertainty about whether children silently and asymptomatically might be carriers when, yes, the transmission evidence so far is that they're not, quote, super carriers, but a lot of medical people also say we don't know that much about children as transmitters yet. And then we have the school bus drivers and whether or not you can space appropriately on the school buses. And as if all that isn't enough, there's two other wild cards that I think jeopardize the ability for the children and school teachers and school personnel to return safely. One of those involves financial matters. The governor has said he's going to cut the budget 20% if he doesn't hear from Congress. And so far, it's unclear that Congress will be able to support or is willing to support the states additionally. And then the second wild card, which we've already seen acted out in Rensselaer County last week, is that New York, despite the governor's efforts to penalize people who come and don't follow the rules for 14 days from 20 states, etc., some folks came up from Georgia, maybe returned from Georgia, who are Rensselaer County folks, and we had a huge upswing of people with COVID in Rensselaer. And so these are all the variables, sir, that make me very concerned about how we can do this safely, meaning by returning to our public school district campuses.
You had mentioned some of the safety measures, or at least the things that are being considered. What do you think schools should consider as they try to map out this very sticky situation of bringing kids back into the classrooms?
Well, they're obliged by more or less operation of state law to follow, first of all, the state ed and state health department guidelines, and then create their own plan. I'm up here in Tompkins County, and our school districts in our respective counties have to create real careful, specific, precise sets of rules that govern the reopening, reflecting the rules from the state ed and the state health department. And then the governor and those high level officials in Albany will make that determination. And frankly, I think that the criteria that have been advanced by the government agencies are excellent. They're very careful. And I'm sure our school superintendents and our school districts are going to do a terrific job putting something together that reflects the rules. But there's still these two big elephants in the room. Is there going to be money to be able to do this? And secondly, are we going to be able to dodge what you, sir, referred to as a second wave much earlier and sooner than we expected?
I don't think any of us envy the decision makers right now because they have a tough task ahead.
I know it must be so hard. I don't have young children at home, so I don't know if privilege is the right word, but I'm not as vulnerable as so many other upstate New Yorkers are. But we just have to understand that there's no real clear answer here. There's no perfect answer, and there's no perfect political answer or anything. We have a situation where we're just going to have to manage without there being a really good solution. And that's something that's very uncomfortable to all of us. But we've got to get a little more comfortable. And it's easy for me to say, I know, but I don't know what other solution there is, sir. We have to get a little more comfortable with this degree of discomfort that this terrible illness has wreaked upon all of us.
That is Cornell University education specialist Lee Adler. And if you missed any of Brandon's conversation with him, you can download that podcast. We highly recommend you go to fln.org/podcast and do that. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. An overall comfortable air mass is in place now, but as the heat and humidity will return, so will the risk of a few showers and storms. Our call for this afternoon, intervals of clouds and sunshine. There'll be a couple of scattered showers and thunderstorms across parts of central and western Pennsylvania, and that activity couldn't make it into the southern tier and southern Finger Lakes in New York, but isolated. High temperatures, mid-70s to the mid-80s. Tonight, some clouds and mild 60s. Late tonight and tomorrow, rather cloudy with some showers and thunderstorms. Thunderstorms tomorrow could be locally strong. High temperatures in the lower to mid-80s. Thursday, cloud, sun, couple showers and thundershowers, and high temperatures within a few degrees of 80.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Finally, at noon, is it a curveball or a COVID ball? The pitch man for the pandemic will be throwing out the first pitch of the Major League Baseball season this week. We're talking about none other than Dr. Anthony Fauci. With the National Institutes of Health, he'll be throwing out the ceremonial first pitch as the defending World Series champion Washington Nationals take on the New York Yankees Thursday night. For the record, Fauci is a huge Nationals fan, even wore a mask with the team's logo on it at a recent congressional hearing. Fans or no fans, it will be good to have baseball back later this week. And that's our world for Tuesday, the 21st of July. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.